the homes of these learned individuals, though furnished and adorned with luxurious belongings, present a cold, inhospitable appearance to the truly spiritual being, for their inmates are haughty, proud, dissatisfied with life, and forever longing for something more in the line of personal grandeur than what is theirs, and their mental condition reflects itself so strongly upon their exterior surroundings as to cause it to strike a chill to the heart of any aspirational or devotional being who might approach them. Cheerlessness of a want of spirituality. Imagine yourselves in a vast hall, from which all rays of sunlight or warmth are excluded. Imagine this apartment lined with gorgeous pictures of material life that are remarkable only for their excessive brilliant color, and the magnitude and variety of the forms they represent, each nook and recess filled with statues of men, women, and animals, a white, cold, stiff, stern, and lifeless in appearance, the entire building cheerless and chilly, with no appearance of life, activity, or warmth. Think what it would be to your spirit to be condemned to continuously wander over this vast hall, gazing upon the unattractive paintings, and moving in and out among the lifeless statues, cold and unpleasant to the touch. Such a life as you would thus lead corresponds to the existence of those spirits of whom I write. On earth they were only intellectual, broken aesthetic animals, for their love of the beautiful was developed only on the material side, and the spiritual part of life was neglected. Here, they are surrounded by the embodiments of their mental and artistic tastes, but as these are mere forms, and are not imbued with one spiritual idea, they appear cold, unconscious, and dead to the beholder. Continuously wandering amid the senseless, barren forms of their own mind creations, unable to behold anything lovely and meritorious in the productions of others who are more spiritual than themselves, these individuals are like those who live in the frozen regions of the north, stunted in appearance and unable to understand and appreciate the life apart from and beyond their own narrow circle. True, the awakening period will come to all such when they shall become aware of their false position in the spirit world, and learn that there is active duty and noble endeavor beyond them, through which they will gain happiness and a sense of genial, vigorous life, and they will eventually turn to the more exalted realms of immortal life, in order to gain a spiritual education that will unfold their soul powers, and cultivate the true sense of beauty and the highest intellectual abilities their spirits are capable of expressing. Then their condition will be one of warmth, vigor, and activity. Their surroundings, while beautiful in form and expression, will partake of glorified life, and their homes appear bright, attractive, and hospitable to those who enter within their walls. Blending of the spiritual and intellectual. I have seen spirits who were intellectual and lovers of beauty on earth, who were also spiritual in their aspirations, proclivities, and tendencies, whose tastes were delicate, and whose habits were very refined. The productions of such minds, whether of a literary or artistic nature, appealed ever to the sense of the beautiful, the love of the good, and to the highest conception of purity in the hearts of those for whom they were created. The conditions in the higher life of such souls are glorious. In spirit they are active, ever working for the general good of humanity, seeking to perfect their own powers of mind in order to give them a more beautiful and complete expression for the delight or elevation of others. Ready to receive instruction from the more advanced minds around them, they are constantly gaining a richer experience and a greater unfoldment of their powers. Aspirational in nature and loving in spirit, these beings send forth a congenial, helpful influence that attracts the good and wise to their side. Their homes are bright, cheerful, and attractive. A delicious warmth pervades their households, for they are made radiant by the divine light of love which never grows dim. The surroundings of such celestials are like a beautiful and immense garden, where the choicest and sweetest of flowers bloom, the clearest of waters flow, the most beautiful of birds warble melodious songs of praise, the whitest and daintiest sculptured forms are to be seen, where the stateliest of trees uprear their plumy heads, the balmiest of zephyrs blow, the richest and most delicious fruits are to be found, and where all things continuously allure unto the enjoyment of the finest, most glorious forms of sentient, active, genial life. Who would not rather roam through such a fairy land of sweets than be compelled to wander in that gloomy, cheerless hall of senseless stone and vapid, unsatisfactory paintings mentioned above? The difference between the two classes of intellectual and broken aesthetic spirits is this: the one has developed a taste for beautiful forms and intellectual pursuits merely to satisfy its own material nature and for its own personal glorification and aggrandizement, and while catering to the external has ignored the vital or spiritual part of its being. The other class has cultivated its sense of beauty and educated its intellect in order to instruct and elevate others, has produced literary and artistic work for the purpose of appealing to the inner and higher natures of humanity, has sought and found the love element within its own being, and has thrown it out as a quickening power to others, has endeavored to cultivate the spiritual attributes of its being, and to bring them into conscious harmony with the outward forces of nature. Therefore, while the condition of one class in spirit life is inharmonious and unsatisfactory to itself and others, that of the other is beautiful, blissful, and congenial to all. Happiness derivable only from within. Observation and experience have taught me that in the spirit world, as in earthly life, individuals vary in disposition, constitution, and characteristics. What is of the greatest interest to one person possesses no charm whatever for another, and that particular employment one being is adapted to pursue may be totally unsuited for another. Happiness among spirits is not drawn from external sources, but finds its central power within the soul, from whence it radiates outward, and clothes every objective form with beauty and every external pleasure with a splendor peculiar to itself, which in turn becomes reflected back upon the heart, and increases the enjoyment of the individual. Never was there a truer declaration than that attributed to the gentle Nazarene: "Ayo, the kingdom of heaven is within you," and it is as true today as it could possibly have been 18 or 20 centuries ago. Unless the soul is at peace with itself and all others, A is not envious of the good another may possess, lives in a sphere of purity and kindly feeling, and desires only to do right, A he or she cannot experience true happiness, which essentially in itself constitutes heaven. But when an individual has attained that superior condition of mind consequent upon the possession of such lovely attributes, he or she has indeed arrived at the heavenly state of existence, and cannot be otherwise than happy. The human nature of spirits. Humanity appears to be the same everywhere, and in every grade of unfoldment. Many mortals seem to think that spirits of those who have passed through the material transition called death must be somewhat different from themselves. This, however, is not absolutely the case. Spirits are human beings, nothing more, many of them very imperfect at that, though many others are pure-minded, progressive, and exalted individuals, yet essentially human in every attribute and tendency. And why not? What is more beautiful, more intelligent, more powerful, and more noble than humanity? Nothing but divinity itself. Perverted human nature is deplorable, and to be pitied while condemned, but unfolding, advancing human nature is to be admired and emulated, for it is steadily arising toward divinity. Mankind ever has been, and at present is, subjected to various grades of development. We find man low down in advancement, almost brutal in the exhibition of his nature, but by degrees ascending from the immoral and degraded to the good and the better, we come to man purified, unfolded in spiritual refinements, exalted even to the heights of angelhood, but a human being still. These varying conditions, incident to the life and experience of humanity, are just as vivid and operative in the spirit world as on earth. Hence we have on that plane of existence the pure and the lowly, the exalted and the humble, the wise and the ignorant, the happy as well as the miserable. The conditions of peace, satisfaction, and enjoyment in the spirit world do not depend upon the possession of outward grandeur, external power, and wealth, or a love of display, as they too often do on earth, though those who are happiest and most free from care in the higher life are the richest in spiritual possessions, and their surroundings show a refined and cultivated taste, accompanied by the means and ability for gratifying this love of the beautiful. There is no inconsistency in this statement, because, as I have before explained, the external conditions and surrounding of spirits are but the expression and reflection of the mental or soul condition within the being, and must appear beautiful, sweet, and delicate, or the reverse, according to the mental and moral status of the individual. Right and wrong states of contentment. Progressive spirits are contented with their existence and its surroundings sufficiently to enjoy and appreciate all the good and lovely things that are theirs, but not enough to prevent them from reaching upward for more light, instruction, and soul exaltation. They are deeply grateful for life and its powers of unfoldment, but they ever desire to move steadily on in the acquirement of wisdom and the accomplishment of good works. Undeveloped spirits are prone to exhibit an indifference to their condition which may be mistaken for contentment, and which discloses a kind of inertia which prevents its possessor from attempting to rise into a healthier and happier state of being. This is, unfortunately, too often the trouble with those who need assistance, and is the chief obstacle good spirits have to contend with in their efforts to benefit those unhappy souls. Not until these miserable beings manifest a desire to better their own condition can the ministering spirits who endeavor to assist them be of any service, but when this wish to rise exerts itself in an attempt to reach upward, the degraded being is encircled by the magnetic influence of that human yet divine love which emanates from the wise and beneficent ones around him, upon which, through the impelling force of his inner desire and exertion, he rises to superior heights and more pleasing conditions. From degree to degree of unfoldment, from grade to grade of promotion in the great school of life, humanity is ever passing, pressing on toward the goal where all lovely attributes blend, and approaching the sphere of perfected being. Each one will, in God's own time, through experience and discipline, outgrow all imperfect traits, all unholy tendencies, and become, through the operations of nature's grandest law, progress, what all are intended to be, a noble, manly, purified, and perfected human beings. Chapter 14. Our Cooperative Societies. I have told my friends something of the work of the spirits who labor for the good of humanity, and have described some of the conditions that surround human beings who embodied and disembodied or which make or mar their happiness, elevate or depress their spirits. As on earth, so in the spirit world, various organizations and societies exist for the suppression of vice and evil, the propagation of virtue and truth, the diffusion of knowledge and the banishment of ignorance, the protection of society, and the general elevation of mankind. Many of your most philanthropic schemes, your greatest benevolent institutions, your grandest methods of benefiting humanity, your purest organizations, and your noblest societies for the good of man, are outgrowths from similar labors and establishments that have long flourished in the spirit world. Wise and exalted spirits unite in working for the blessing of their fellow beings. They devise ways and means, and work continuously to enlighten human minds upon the laws of life. It has always been the desire of these spirits to bring a comprehension of their work to mortals, and to enlist kindred souls on earth in like labors. Whenever they have found mortals sufficiently susceptible to holy influences, and possessed with souls beating in sympathy for suffering humanity, they have worked upon their sensibilities until they have become quickened under the angelic power operating upon them, and have responded to the thought of the attending spirits. What is the result? Philanthropic schemes are started, agitated, and discussed. Earnest men and noble women associate together to evolve plans for the benefit of the lowly, weak, and suffering. A new influx of spiritual power is brought to them, which they imbibe into their lives, all unconsciously to themselves, and very soon some useful, benevolent work is in progress, corresponding to a similar beneficent labor in the higher life. Earthly reforms originate in spirit life. In this way good works are conceived and elaborated on earth. I do not mean to say that mortals are unable to project and perform any philanthropic enterprise for themselves, and that your self-sacrificing, earnest men and women are made so entirely by the influence of others who are unseen, but I do affirm that all good spirits are working in the direction of human reform, and to benefit humanity, that many of these intelligences have thus labored for many centuries, that their sympathies and tender pity for the unfortunate condition of a large portion of mankind bring them into close contact with the earth, and that, when they perceive a mortal who is alike sympathetic, pitiful, and desirous of doing good with themselves, they are attracted to such a being, and by the magnetic influence and quickening energy they shed upon him, they stimulate his powers, multiply his resources, and inspire him to express his holy desires and good wishes in outward, practical form. Thus, noble institutions are established on earth for the enlightenment, education, and elevation of our race. Grand labors for the suppression of vice and the promotion of virtue are pursued, and these are types, counterparts, and representations of like institutions and good works in the spirit world. Whatever is good, reformatory, or beneficent in its nature, whatever is progressive and an aid to human unfoldment, is abiding, for it is of the spirit. Whatever is debasing, selfish in character, and downward in tendency, is transient. It belongs to the material, and cannot survive the encroachments of the higher law. Therefore, all good works have their inception in the spirit, and gain their first growth in the land of souls. After a time, when conditions are made favorable for their appearance, they become expressed through physical life, and are productive of lasting results for the welfare of humanity. The spirit kingdoms that are inhabited by intelligences who have advanced to a state of happiness commensurate to the lesson of truth, wisdom, and self-abnegation they have learned, who know that life is only truly employed by those who labor for the benefit of others, who are pure-minded, and work in love for those more unfortunate than themselves, may be said to consist of one grand cooperative society, the various members of which are so united in sympathy and purpose that all work together as one person for the amelioration of human sorrow and suffering. This society has, however, its various duties to perform, and these duties may be assigned to different bodies of intelligences, so that a number of smaller organizations or bands are formed, all having their particular labors to perform, and all working to the one grand end of educating mankind. That you may more fully understand the work of these spiritual societies, and the results, vast and important in their nature, continually flowing from them, I will endeavor to unfold before you a description of the labors, uses, and intentions of a few of them. I know that the earthly language I am obliged to employ is very inadequate to express things belonging to the spirit, where life is rich in signs and symbols, and where ideas are multiplied beyond the power of mortals to express, yet, if I but give you a faint conception of these things, you will gain some knowledge of life in the spheres, and be the better prepared to experience it yourselves when you pass up higher. Divisions of Spirit Mission of Labor. A large number of spirits have banded together for the purpose of disseminating their light of truth and a practical knowledge of real life among the ignorant and unenlightened of both worlds. In order to utilize their powers and to employ their energies more effectively, the large band of workers is subdivided into a number of smaller societies, or unions, each of which has a special duty to perform. Thus, one of these organizations finds its particular mission among the lowly and undeveloped individuals of earthly life, and it is the duty of its members to use their influence to its utmost extent for the elevation of those misguided, untutored individuals with whom they come in contact. While much may be accomplished by the good spirits from time to time by operating directly upon the hearts and minds of the unfortunate ones, and implanting within them a desire to advance in the attainment of knowledge and goodness, yet their greatest means of labor is to exert an influence upon the denizens of earth who are educated, cultured, and refined, and awaken within them a determination to agitate the subject of human needs and requirements, until, through the power and persistency they bring to bear upon such questions, a widespread public sentiment is created in favor of them that will force society to recognize their claims, and to seek some method for their proper adjustment. Thus has every reform that has resulted in benefit to the human race received its impetus on earth from bands of spirits whose special work has been in that direction. In this way, the question of a universal and free education has been aroused, agitated, and started upon the road to a practical and successful solution in this country. Thus, the abolition of human slavery in the American nation received its first great power to accomplish its vast results from the spirit world. Thus, the subject of temperance was brought home to the attention and thought of thinking, humanitarian minds by a band of invisible intelligences from the higher life, who have pledged themselves to relax not their efforts until they behold every mortal regarding intemperance as an evil habit to be devoutly shunned and resisted. Woman suffrage. Thus, the question of universal liberty has been aroused in the minds of the thinkers of every nation, a subject that will not down at any bidding, but one that will continue to arise until all countries are thrown open in a hospitable welcome to all people, and until all rights and privileges become free and equal to each one. As an outgrowth of this idea comes the question of woman's suffrage, which makes its demands with the laws of justice and reason on its side, and which will continue to appear before mankind until its claims and requests are recognized and granted, for this matter is so vital to all classes of society, and so essential to the true advancement of the race is under the supervision of a cooperative society in the heavens, whose members are enlisted in the labor of guiding it onto a grand and successful result. Women's suffrage, or the right of women to vote, was established in the United States over the course of the late 19th and early 20th centuries, first in various states and localities, then nationally in 1920 with the ratification of the 19th Amendment to the United States Constitution. From Wiki 2026, more, the Indians. Growing out of the question of human freedom also appears the problem of how are the Native Americans of this country or the Indians are to be protected and cared for? And the bands of spirits who are looking after this matter declare that nothing short of exact justice towards the red man can answer their demands in this quarter. And sooner or later this great question must be settled by the government of the United States granting the privileges of education, industrial and intellectual, of establishing homes, of holding property, and the rights of citizenship to all honest and respectable Indians, for they, the spirits, will continue to exert their influence and power upon the inhabitants of this country until the people arouse in their might, and demand justice for the too long outraged red man. Peace arbitration. The subject of national and sectional warfare is also under the attention of a large organization of spirits, who are working to establish a system of peace arbitration on earth, under the quiet and harmonious regulation of which all national or other difficulties relating to the interests of the people may be wisely adjusted, and there is no doubt in my mind but that their efforts will be crowned with success. Heredity. There are many other branches of reform relating to human interests that are looked after by wise spirits who are laboring for the advancement of mankind, and one especially, and an important theme, is that which comes under the title of heredity, and which concerns more vitally, perhaps, than does anything else the health, happiness, and prosperity of the coming races. Much thought and observation long since taught a large class of thinking spirits what a few mortals are but just beginning to learn, viz., that unless man attends to the offspring he rears by providing them with the very best prenatal conditions for growth and development, it will be almost useless for him to attempt to reform them of gross habits and impure tendencies after they have entered upon the arena of mortal existence and strife. Not until humanity is educated concerning the laws of its being, and understands that whatever trait or characteristic is unduly developed in the individual, whatever taint of bodily or moral disease is allowed to fester in his system, will surely transmit its evil results to his children, and that it is his duty to so study his constitution and habits, and to so regulate his daily life, that he will be able to entail upon his offspring only those traits of character, or those elements of physical health, that will produce the most beautiful and satisfactory results. Not until then will the coming generations show a proper development of physical and moral power that will regenerate and redeem the world from misery. The laws of heredity, or transmission, work in two directions, and while they declare the sins of the fathers shall be visited upon the children, They also maintain that the virtues and lovely attributes of the parents shall descend to their offspring with added power. Therefore, wise spirits are working for the dissemination of this great truth among mortals, and they are constantly bringing in a new influx of thought and the desire to agitate the subject to those few minds on earth who are ready to receive this knowledge, and who have the courage to express their convictions for the enlightenment of the many. An organization of spirits for the elevation of Earth's inhabitants. We have a society in the spirit world whose members are all pledged to the work assigned them. The tasks set before them by the wise and exalted spirits whose abilities, intelligence, beneficent purposes and practices, as well as spiritual experiences, qualify them for their positions as guides, directors, and counselors are not always pleasant and agreeable to the members. And yet, knowing that these tasks are designed to work out some lasting blessing for others, they falter not, but attend faithfully to the accomplishment of what proves to be a divinely appointed mission. The labors of this society are varied, but all tend in the one direction, a. that of purifying and educating humanity. One or more of its members may be directed to visit some den of iniquity on earth, and by a holy and uplifting influence seek to draw away and benefit some unhappy, miserable spirit who lingers there, and also to exert a magnetic power upon some degraded mortal until he or she becomes disgusted with an unholy life, and feels a desire to abandon it for a better. This is not as pleasing and beautiful a task to the spirits who engage in it as is the mission of others of the same band who are delegated to watch over and care for little children whose lives are innocent, and whose conditions are refining, but they know that in their field of labor is the promise of good results, and they apply themselves faithfully to the performance of their duty. Great good is accomplished in this way. In every crowd of undeveloped and immoral beings who cling close to the lowest haunts of human life on earth, the wise beneficent spirits are sure to find at least one mortal and one spirit who have become satiated with the indulgence of their animal natures, disgusted with their lives of wrongdoing and sin, and anxious to begin a holier life. Thus, these angel missionaries find fruitful soil in which to plant their good seed, and, after many trials, and the exercise of great patience, they have the satisfaction of finding their efforts rewarded with success, and of knowing that they have been the means of guiding more than one immortal soul toward the life of peace and happiness that belongs to all, but which can only be attained by manly efforts to reach it, a life of endeavor and of self-renunciation so far as the gratification of personal pride, passion, or ambition is concerned. The society of spirits of which I write is large and extensive, and embraces a great number of intelligences who work in connection not only with this country but also with those of the entire world. Wherever there is a human being to be uplifted, instructed, and blessed, wherever there is an immortal soul to be redeemed from error, they are to be found. The mission of these spirit people is to do good. Their labors are confined to no race, color, or nation, but are extended to all humanity. It would be impossible for me to enumerate the various methods they adopt for the accomplishment of their work, or the divers duties and labors that engage their attention, but they are earnest, zealous, and faithful to duty. And under their benign influence the lowly are exalted and the weak receive strength. Cooperation is a grand incentive to labor, it also bringeth strength and courage to those who are united by its shining bands. It is the creator of harmony, sympathy, and fraternity of feeling in the hearts of all whom it reaches. Under its beautiful and effective ministrations, humanity is destined to grow and unfold its highest powers and attributes until universal love and tenderness bloom in all hearts, and every soul, of every race and clime, becomes united in a heavenly band of brotherhood and sisterhood. Care and protection of mediums. One of our extensive cooperative societies is composed of young ladies whose duties are to study the laws governing mediumship, as well as to gain an understanding of those electric forces operating between spirit and matter, of which certain spirits take advantage in manifesting their presence to mortals. Realizing the grievous error concerning immortal life in which the larger portion of mankind is plunged, and wishing to do all in their power to demonstrate the truth to humanity, so that doubt may give way to certainty, fear to confidence, ignorance to knowledge, and all hearts made glad with the soul-cheering conviction that there is no death, but that life is eternal. These spirits have joined together for the purpose of working in harmony for the promotion of spiritual truth upon the earth. Singly, in pairs, or in groups, the young people of this society visit the various mediums of earth to supply them with magnetic power and spiritual strength.